Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable! Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Episode 56, Mike, of the Last Round Podcast, coming off a YouTube sensational fight. Would you call it sensational? I mean, you were there ringside, Mike. What'd you think about that?
No, I wouldn't call it sensational fight. It was different.
Business-wise.
Well, yeah, if it was lining my pocket, yeah, I'm sure I'd be happy.
Well, yeah. But thanks again, guys, for listening to episode 56 of the Last Round Podcast. I'm Danny Z, along with my co-host, Michael Shepherd. And excuse me, before we get into the reviews, obviously, of this past weekend and previews of upcoming events and fights, we have a very special guest on the line who's currently in training camp as he's preparing for the third defense of his 130-pound super featherweight WBA World Championship on November 23rd at the Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California against Rene Alvarado, which is actually a rematch from 2015. Andrew Cancio is on the line. Thank you very much for joining us, Andrew.
No problem. Thank you guys for having me.
So, as we mentioned, you know, you're fighting Rene Alvarado for the second time on November 23rd at Fantasy Springs Casino. You know, just tell us, because obviously he's your mandatory for your title, your world title, and this is your third defense, and he's worked his way back up to this position. What do you think is going to be different in regards to Alvarado's game plan in this second go around?
I think what's going to be different, I think he's going to try to stay away more this time than the first time. He got caught with an uppercut the first time around. So I think he's going to try to be smart with that and not getting caught with the left hook or an uppercut. But he worked his way back up. So, he's a very strong fighter. He's tough. I've been in there with him before, like you said, and I don't expect anything different from him. I think he's going to, as far as his coming forward and his power and, his stamina, he's always in tip-top shape. So, but like I said, I think he's going to be smarter, try to be smarter and not get caught with that uppercut or a hook. So we're just going to have to fight smarter than him that night. That way we can walk away with the victory.
Andrew, this will be your 12th fight at Fantasy Springs Casino and fifth consecutive sellout, 3,000 plus. What's it like fighting in front of such a huge, passionate crowd?
It feels great. It's something that, you know, that I dreamed of, having a sold-out arena, everybody cheering you on, you know, whenever they announce your name, and then, you know, the fans are just getting loud, and it's very, very exciting. It's like breathtaking whenever you're up there. It's like, man, you know, this is exactly where I wanted to be at in my boxing career. And sure enough, it's happening. So it's a great feeling to have that much supporters come out and support me and cheer me on throughout my fight.
Are you still on that high from when you won the title and even after the rematch? Because obviously, you know, that was a big moment in both of those fights, especially the first one. Do you still feel like you're on that high?
Oh yeah, most definitely. I like being the world champion. I don't want to lose this belt. And I'm still on the same high. Like it's crazy. It's crazy to, after all the hard work and dedication through the ups and downs, that I'm actually here. So yeah, I'm still living on the high. I'm very fortunate and very blessed to have gotten here and accomplished my goal, my dream.
Do you think that you're still fighting for respect in the division, even though you defeated Machado, who you were obviously the underdog, and even in the rematch, I believe you were also the underdog in the betting odds? Do you feel that you've gotten that respect, or do you think you're still working for that respect in the division?
I feel like I'm still working for it. I feel like a lot of people respect me a lot more now. After the second one, a lot of people thought the first Machado fight was a fluke. There's no way I can go in there and destroy him like that. And then after the second fight, you know, I did it even better. I didn't get dropped, and I did it a round earlier. So I think I did get a lot of people's respect. But at the same token, I feel like they're just like, oh, you know, he just had Machado's number. And I want to go, you know, I still want to continue showing people why I'm here. You know, November 23rd, I'm looking forward to doing that once again. And hopefully, you know, God willing, we move on to, you know, the bigger fights, trying to fight other champions to unify. So, but yeah, I definitely do feel like I'm still out there trying to get, you know, people's respect.
So I'm going to throw my co-host Mike under the bus here for a second. When we previewed that fight, your first fight with Machado, when you took his belt, we obviously did our predictions. You know, we analyzed the fight, and I picked you. And Mike thought I was crazy because you were such a big underdog. And Mike went with Machado. You know, I think, you know, in regards to looking at it from a betting odds standpoint, that Machado was a safer bet in a sense. So I'm going to give Mike an opportunity to tell you how he was wrong and how he felt bad after you knocked him out.
I picked you the second time though, Andy.
Yeah, he picked you the second time. He did pick you the second time, but
yeah, as you should have the second time around. Like, all right,
I'll just leave the interview now.
But no, yeah, I think especially after the second fight, when you stopped him again, you stopped him with the body shot. I think definitely that's when you really you quieted your critics, because there was obviously a lot of people, you know, sometimes there is flukes in the sport of boxing, in the combat sports world. I mean, it does happen. But I think you showed, especially in the rematch, that, that wasn't a fluke, you know, and Machado, before you beat him the first time and even the second time was, you know, one of the best fighters in the division. You know, obviously, Jamel Herring just fought this Saturday. He beat actually your stablemate, Lamont Roche Jr. Did you catch that fight? Because Jamel Herring has a WBO title at 130 pounds. If you did catch that fight, what'd you think of his performance?
I did catch the fight, and I think he fought a pretty good fight. He kept Lamont Roche at his distance for most of the fight. I know he got caught with, a left hook by Lamont Roach, but he was throwing good combinations, good jabs, good body shot. I think he looked pretty good that night. He did a very good job as far as his performance. I like fighting. I think I do pretty well against southpaws. And like I said, I want to go after all the champions. It doesn't matter which one it is. Hopefully, like I said, hopefully we get past Rene Alvarado. Jamal Herring definitely put on a good performance. It was a good first defense for him.
Andrew, with all the champions in the division, you've got Miguel Berchal, obviously Jamal Herring, as you just spoke about, and Tevin Farmer. Which one do you think stylistically would you like the best?
Stylistically, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think me and Berchal will make an all-action war. I think it can be one of those fights that it can be talked about for many, many years to come. I think stylistically, we would match up perfectly. It'll be a scary fight for me, don't get me wrong, but it's one of those, it's those fights that you want, that you dream of. That way, you know, you're remembered for a long time. And not that, it'd be good for the fight fans, the boxing world. You know, I think it'd be like an Eric Morales Marco Antonio Barrera type fight. I think me and Berchal will definitely mix it up pretty well.
So Berchal just fought a few weeks ago as well. It seems like all you guys in the 130-pound division are all fighting within, you know, close proximity of each other. Berchal just fought and stopped Jason Sosa at the Dignity Health Sports Park in Carson, California on ESPN. Did you catch his performance? Because he stopped Sosa with a body shot, which was, you know, very, very nice. His body work that night was extremely impressive. And obviously, you stopped Machado with body shots. So, did you catch his performance? If you did, what'd you think about that?
Yes, I caught his performance, and he fought his fight the whole time. Sosa, I don't think he didn't even get off. Berchal didn't let him. And Berchal is very, very, very good at that. He'll throw the 1, 2, 3 up top, and boom, he'll throw the left hook. back downstairs, and while you're blocking the hook upstairs, he goes and sneaks one in on your body. You know, he's very strong. He throws combinations, and, you know, he has the win. We seen it with when he fought Vargas, Francisco Vargas, and, you know, they went toe-to-toe for a good minute on their first fight. So I think his performance is great. Right now he's looking really, really well. But like I said, I want to go out there and fight the best, and I want to fight the best at their prime. I want to give fight fans great, great fights. So he said, I think me and Brichelle will definitely be in all-action war for as long as it lasts.
In terms of negotiations, Andrew, and, you know, not looking past Rene Alvarado, of course, but in terms of negotiations with the other world champions at 130 pounds, who do you think you would have the easiest, your team and Golden Boy would have the easiest time in making a fight with in terms of one of the other champions?
Well, they did the top rank with Francisco Vargas and Brichelle. They did the same thing with Jamal Herron and Lamont Roach. So they're obviously working with each other, and I don't think any of those fights would be hard to make. So I think those would, Jamal Herron or Brichelle, I think could be easy made. But Brichelle had already said that he wants Oscar Valdez, and they're both top ranked fighters. So yeah, I'm sure that's going to be real easy for Bob Arum to make.
And, you know, also one of your other stable mates, Joseph Diaz Jr., you know, him and Tevin Farmer have been going back and forth. So that's, you know, a possible fight that might be made in the near future. Have you ever talked to Joseph Diaz after your world title win? Because, you know, it is kind of ironic that you fought him a couple years ago and, you know, unfortunately he beat you. Everybody, you know, at least the critics and the boxing fans thought that Joseph Diaz would get to that, to your stature first. But, you know, it's funny how the world works, how you got there. Have you ever had a conversation with Joseph Diaz after your world title win and, you know, and saying like, hey man, I beat you to it?
No, we don't talk like that. We just say hello. But no, he knows I want to fight him. He knows I want to give him a rematch. And I know him and Tevin Farmer have been going back and forth, their little Twitter war. So hopefully that they supposedly that fight's getting made in January. So if JoJo were to win that fight, that'd be great. As long as I win my fight November 23rd, and I wouldn't mind unifying if he were to win, then it would be even easier. So it's all up to JoJo basically if he wins that fight against Tevin Farmer. But me personally, I think Tevin Farmer outboxes JoJo Diaz. I seen his fight in I believe what was it in Mexico, right? Was it Chihuahua? Yeah, in Chihuahua, Mexico, right. I believe, right?
Right.
For JoJo Diaz, and I don't think he performed very well. So I think Tevin Farmer, in my eyes, is an outbox him if that fight were to happen. But you know, I could be wrong. Hopefully, I am. So. But like I said, even Tim Farmer, he just looks softball, and you know, I wouldn't mind fighting him as well. And so if that deal gets made, so I know there's opportunities that if JoJo doesn't win the belt, there's a possibility that I can fight Tim Farmer, because obviously Golden Boy and I believe Eddie Hearn are in negotiations with that fight. So yeah, we just have to see how the world works out, how it plays out. But I definitely want the rematch with JoJo Diaz. I'm a way different fighter than I was when I fought him back when I did. So I definitely want to avenge my loss.
Andrew, you have quite a unique story, you know, being a world champion and then also working full-time for the Southern California Gas Company. Do you feel that keeps you grounded, and how much time have you taken off for this fight?
It definitely does keep me grounded. It keeps me working hard. Today I was off for the holiday, and it felt great to just wake up, go run, relax, come back, relax, and then go to the gym, and then relax. You know, it definitely helped out today. I'm only taking fight week off, so I don't have no more time on my books. I've already burned through my vacations from the other fights. So, this week I'll be taking the whole week off without pay, but it's cool. because I need to rest and all that. I need to be ready for Saturday night, for next Saturday night. So yeah, just 1 week off is what I got.
That's wild, man. I still can't believe that, but I think that's very admirable. Andrew Cancio, WBA World Super Featherweight Champion at 130 pounds, fights Rene Alvarado in a rematch on November 23rd at Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California. And we're pretty sure that your hometown crowd from Blythe, California, will show up again in herds again. And you know, before we let you go, speaking about Blythe, because I don't know if you remember what, after you won your title earlier this year, I think it was back in February, the media was talking to you after the fight about your win right there. The whole crowd had already cleared out. But I had asked you if you had any plans to run for mayor of Blythe, and you had told me no. But this now we're talking to you after you've been honored by the city. Did that opinion change? Are you going to run for mayor?
No, that's not my profession right there. I'm just trying to fight, continue winning, and stacking some money. That way I can buy a house. I want to buy a house out here in Ventura. That's the next goal, the next dream to buy a house out here. So yeah, no, I'm going to stick to boxing for now.
All right. Well, Andrew Cancio, I'm holding out hope. I'm holding out hope. Mayor Andrew Cancio of Blythe. I'm holding it out. He's saying no right now, but you never know. You never know. But you know, we'd like to thank you for coming on this week on the last round, Andrew. And obviously, you're fighting November 23rd on DAZN as the main event. Defending your world title, 130 pounds. And then go ahead and plug your social media. Obviously, your fight upcoming. Go ahead. The floor is yours, man.
Yeah, everybody, tune in live on DAZN. And you guys can't make it at Fantasy Springs. Follow me at Andrew Cancio on Twitter, El Chango 130 on Instagram. And yeah, just tune in. Me and Renee definitely had a all action packed war for as long as it lasted the first time around. And I'm expecting anything less from him this time around. And but I'm sure I'm ready. I'm going to get really ready for whatever he brings. So it's going to be a very entertaining night for the fight fans. So tune in.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Andrew. Good luck to you in your fight on November 23rd.
No problem. Thank you guys for having me on again.
You got it. Take care. Thanks, Bernie.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, gentlemen. Andrew, I'll call you right back. Okay, pal.
Okay.
Thanks.
Man, that was wild. He's a feel-good story, man. He's a feel-good story. Especially like you mentioned when you asked him about him having his full-time job, and he said he's taking the whole fight week off without pay. Mm. I mean, hey, his purses are increasing, so he can afford that. But I'm telling you, man, like, he's one of those stories that you can make a movie out of if his career, even now, you can make a movie out of it now. But especially if he keeps winning and he fights a couple more years or whatever, and just for some reason just keeps, and especially if he unifies, imagine that.
Because the fight that you was talking about when he fought Jojo Diaz, he lost to Jojo Diaz and actually kind of went into a semi-retirement.
Yeah, I think that he was like hurt about it. And I understand, he was like, oh, is this worth it for me? So, I mean, I'm telling you, man, there's a story there regardless.
It'll be fun to see. The Rent Alvarado fight would be fun. And then also, I think the fight with Bichelt would be an unbelievable war. One of the ones that you'd like to see, at StubHub, the war grounds in Southern California, as they call it. So it's definitely one I would pay to see.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And he's right. Like, he mentioned Burchell. He'd like to have a fight with Burchell. And he even, he admitted some like, hey, Burchell would be a dangerous fight, but let's do it. All Mexican war. And I understand that. I understand that. Especially, we were at the Top Rank on ESPN card, the Burchell Sosa fight. So we were at the ringside and we heard those body shots from Burchell. But obviously that's why I touched on it with Andrew Cancio, and he stopped Machado with body shots as well. Would that be a war of the body shots if they fought?
Like the BMF belt, I think we should have the body snatcher belt.
Hey, man, you never know.
BSB.
Hey, if somebody uses that, they better remember where they heard that. Right here on the last round. Right, Mike?
Yeah, get a little belt made up. Body snatcher belt.
The BSB. Body snatcher belt. Once again, we'd like to thank Andrew Cancio for jumping in on this week. He fights Rene Alvarado on November 23rd on DAZN. That should be a good fight. I mean, he stopped him last time, but as I mentioned, Alvarado's worked his way back up with some wins, some string of wins, and he's trying to dethrone the hype train behind Andrew Cancio.
We'll be there.
Yeah. So I'm telling you, he's going to run for mayor. You know, he's
you heard it here first.
He's going to run for mayor. I know he said no the first time. He said no again. Hey, you never know. You never know. I'm going to keep asking him every time I see him to put in his head. He's like, you know what? Maybe those guys are right. Maybe they're right. Maybe I should run for mayor. Remember, like, do you ever see Back to the Future? Do you remember there was a scene where they're in the diner or something, and like one of the cleaning guys, somebody says his name, and then he's like, yeah, you should run for mayor. Or he's like, hey, you should be mayor, because I think it's like the past or the future. I don't know, something like that. And then he's like, yeah, I should run for mayor. And he ends up running for mayor like in the future. I'm telling you, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Back to the Future with Andrew El Chango Cancio. I'm telling you. But, you know, going back to what? We had a fight. Did we have fights on Friday or Saturday? It was just Saturday?
And Thursday.
Thursday?
The Nonito Diner.
Oh, my God. How did we forget? You know why? Because it was like at 5 in the morning over here on the West Coast. Okay. Nonito Diner, in a way, the monster. Look. That was that fight lived up to the hype. I think it did. It gave, in a way, the hardest test he's ever had up until this point. And he didn't stop. I think we touched on it before this fight, and I think I might have mentioned it, how people were saying, oh, in a way, the monster, like he was the heavy betting odds favorite, which I understand, but you got to remember that Donaire, it wasn't like Donaire was just gifted that fight. Like, they won, it was a tournament, you know, they each won like three fights before to get to that final. And yeah, Donaire is not what he once was 6 years ago or something, you know, when he was in his prime and he was at pound for pound top five. I understand that, but I still think he had enough left in the gas tank to give a fight, and he did. There was one point when, you know, I don't know, was it the ninth? When Donaire, he hurt in a way, like, big time, but I think it was towards the end of the round, and, you know, he saved by the bell, but he hurt him, and I think if he would have had maybe 20, 30 more seconds, you never know.
It was a great fight, definitely another fight contender for fight of the year. It was good to see. I think a lot of people, you know, were expecting Donaire just to get blown out, you know, because of the age difference, because obviously, you know, Inoue was the monster and was just going in there and just, you know, powering through people. So good performance, a great performance that you could see maybe Donaire just leave it there, you know, go off into retirement, the first person to take, you know, Inoue to 12 rounds, you know, the next, kind of like the pass.
Was he the first person?
I think he's the first person to take.
That's wild. That's even more impressive.
Like the passing of the torch, as they say.
Yeah. No, yeah, I could see that, like, as a torch passing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Donaire literally gave him everything he had. Inoue didn't stop him, but he got him with that nasty body shot. It was like a delayed reaction. He gets him with, I think it was a left hook to the liver, and then Donaire kind of winces, and you can see he wants to keep going, but then he turns around, he's like, oh, forget it, and he starts, like, you know, running away, turning up his back, and then he takes a knee. And, oh, man, like, I thought that was a beautiful punch. Beautiful punch, but, you know, I think that after that punch, there was still a lot of time left in the round. And Donaire, you could see in his face, like, he was just trying to, like, power through. And because there was, obviously, when you get hit a shot like that on your opponent, you're going to try to pounce on him. I mean, it happens. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And in a way, obviously, hit the gas pedal and try to stop him. And I think, you know, 30 seconds later or something, Donaire got him with like a straight right or something like that to stop his momentum. Like, he, you know, in a way was kind of jumping in and trying to, you know, get the final shot to end the fight. And Donaire, even though you can see it in his face, he was like, he was taking punishment. He was able to get a shot in there to pretty much like make him step back. He's like, hey, I still got pop here. And I think that shot is what saved him in terms of finishing the round. I thought it was a great fight. It just sucked that it was like so early in the morning, you know, on both East Coast and West Coast time. But you know, the good thing is you can go watch on demand on DAZN. And no, we're not paid by DAZN to plug that. You know, I know that's a that's been a hot topic the last couple days. No, we weren't paid to say that. I'm just saying it's great that it's on demand. You can go watch it. You can go watch it. So I didn't watch it live. I watched it later on that day, later on that night. So I don't know. I think did Donaire, is he going to retire? Did he say anything about that?
He hasn't said anything officially yet, but I think some of the posts he's been putting on Instagram, you know, showing pictures of like him with his two kids and in a way let him take the trophy, the World Boxing Super Series trophy home. That was cool, man. It kind of looked like he was maybe thinking about retirement. The performance, you know, suggested that he could carry on, but is it one of those ones where that was the last big night that he had left in him?
Right.
And he just blew it all on that night against Inoue. Like I said, it would be a good day to step out, you know, give passing of the torch over to Inoue and just move on to, you know, retirement, bigger and better things, hopefully in retirement for him.
I still think that, you know, even if he does retire, he's had an excellent career. Literally, he fought all the killers in the divisions he was in. He fought the highest level competition. And yeah, he wasn't able to get the W against some of these guys, but he didn't stand away from it. He exemplified, I think, what pound for pound was. Even though he didn't, you know, like I said, he didn't get the W, he fought these guys.
Hall of Famer.
Oh yeah, easily. I think he was a Hall of Famer before. But you know, so you know, whatever he does, I think if he stays, he can still give good fights to guys at 122, 118. I think he could still, you know, based on that performance, obviously, he can still give some guys some really good work. So, but if he does retire, you know, yeah, he's had an excellent career. You know, he's been always, I've always been a fan. So I've always been a fan of the Filipino Flash. So, you know, good luck to him in whatever he does, whether he retires or he stays. Hey, only he knows. And the Monster, I mean, you can't forget about the Monster. You know, Nonito has fought in how many weight classes? Like 3-4. And he went down in weight, you know, at 118. Inoue started at what, 112?
He's had 18 fights through three different weight classes
already. Three different weight classes. So, you know, him coming up, Nonito going down, like Donito's naturally the bigger guy. And then the Monster, I mean, you talk about pound for pound. I mentioned that Canelo's my number one. You know, whether people respect pound for pound or not, I know it's all subjective. I understand. It's just mostly for the entertainment of our boxing knowledge, our fans. You know, it's just nice to throw some hypotheticals out there. But I mean, whether you have Canelo, Lomachenko, or the Monster at number one, I can see all that. You know, everybody's gonna have varying opinions, so which I understand. But I think all those three right now, if you say, hey, I have this guy number one, I can see that. What do you think?
No, I agree. You know, like you say, it's subjective and it kind of changes week to week, you know, depending on people's performances. So I would agree, though, with those sorts of people at the minute, because obviously Canelo's got the performances. He's also got the resume. Inoue, similar, you know, he's definitely on his way to having a great resume, fighting people like Donaire and Lomachenko. You know, he's come in and mopped up everybody in those divisions in and around him. So all of them definitely have a good shout to be the number one. So
no, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and then also after the fight, Top Rank, you know, they had their hand on the button. They announced that they signed, Inoue to their promotion. So he's going to have fights, starting to have more fights in the States, starting in 2020, which is great. He's already a big star in Japan. He's obviously one of the best boxers in the world. And now he's coming with Top Rank, which is obviously one of the biggest promoters in the game. I understand that. And, you know, there was obviously criticism saying like, oh, with Top Rank, you know, he's not going to be able, you know, to fight certain fighters because, you know, how they notoriously promote and stuff like that. Regardless if that happens or not, Top Rank is good at building profiles of their fighters. They are. They're good at building the profiles of their fighters. Look at Tyson Fury recently coming, you know, ever since he signed with Top Rank, his stock has went up. He's got all these opportunities, WWE. Now they're talking about UFC. Dana White's tweeting at him about MMA and all that stuff. Like, Tyson Fury hasn't been as big as this ever. I mean, you know, regardless. So, but I think with the Monster, I think he's like, in a way, is that type of guy. He's just like, well, no, I want to fight these guys, you know, the best guys. You know, he's that type of guy. So, you know, my my recommendation is not to put, I mean, it's, and you know, I could see it that they might put him in his first fight in 2020 against a guy that he should look good against, which I understand that. But I don't think, I think you should just throw him to the dogs. He's already been thrown to the dogs. Just let him keep going. He's obviously proved and been tested, especially in this last fight against Donaire. Let him go in there against the other killers, you know, because he's obviously a killer himself. He's, you know, he's probably the biggest killer in terms of being in the 118-pound division than anybody else. So I don't think he should, I don't think he should have any, like, oh, give him an introduction to the U.S. audience against some guy he should look good against. No, just throw him in there against another world champion or somebody else who's high-ranked contender. That's my opinion. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he should go in there, get all the big fights, just chase the belts, really. Because on the same card, you had Nordin Ubali defeated Inoue's younger brother, Takuma, by unanimous decision over 12 rounds. So that kind of already set up a storyline for Inoue's next fight to try and win the WBC. You know, the big brother going in,
right,
kind of getting the revenge for the younger brother. So
I can see that. I could totally see that.
I mean, if they don't do that storyline, it's kind of, you know, it's already set. Go back to another big fight in Japan. Top Rank already have, you know, Inoue signed up so they could have him as the WBA, IBF, and the WBC champion. So only chasing the WBO. So
I could see it. No, I could definitely see it. And then, you know, obviously Top Rank has a deal with ESPN. Inoue is going to be on ESPN. I'm, you know, obviously, and he knocks people out. He knocks people out. So he's entertaining regardless. So, you know, he's going to, people who are going to watch on ESPN as casual fans, especially, like, damn, who is this guy? You know, this guy's just knocking everybody out. So, you know, I think that was a good move. I think Top Rank, you know, that was a smart strategic decision for him to pick him up. You know, because I'm sure other promoters are probably kicking themselves. I mean, who knows? Maybe other promoters made deals with, trying to make deals with him, and maybe he went with Top Rank. Who knows? I mean, that's usually what happens, right? Especially when you're as prominent as he is in Japan and you show you can knock everybody out. So I understand. But yeah, his stock is definitely going to go up coming over here to the States, which is great. Because obviously everybody always wants to end up coming to the States. If you can make it in the United States, you can make it anywhere, essentially. Isn't that the tagline? I don't know.
It certainly is.
But, you know, congratulations to Inoue, the monster, on his win. He's remains undefeated, too. Remains undefeated. And then moving on. You touched on the Ubali fight, didn't you?
Yeah, we touched on that.
So Ubali beats, that was his, Inoue's brother?
Younger brother,
Takuma Inoue. Ubali gets the unanimous decision, 115-112, 117-110, and 121-107. Those are pretty wide scores. I mean, not in terms of, like, they're all over the place. Like, you can't really tell, like, okay, what kind of fight was this?
The 120-107, I believe, was the infamous Alejandro Rocha.
Oh, he's what was his infamous fight? Oh my gosh, that was this year, wasn't it?
It was this year, wasn't it? Yeah.
Wasn't it Wilder Fury?
Yeah, I think it was.
It was,
yeah.
Wilder Fury at Staples Center, right? Yeah. I think he scored it for Wilder.
He's got something ridiculous.
I think he's from Mexico, and they brought him over here, and yeah, I think it was the Wilder Fury card. That doesn't surprise me, because, like, you know, if you didn't watch this fight, looking at those scores, you're just like, okay, what kind of fight was it? You know, was it a 115-112 fight?
Which is a close fight.
Was it a 117-110? Like, oh yeah, it's competitive, you know, but there was obviously one-sided. Or was it 120-107, which is extremely one-sided?
Which has one guy winning every round.
What were we watching here? I don't get it. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But then moving on, this past Saturday, the 9th of November, from the Staples Center in downtown Los Angeles, on DAZN. You were there live, Mike. How about you? You dive into this.
So the main event, obviously KSI, with the split decision win over Logan Paul.
And if people, before you continue, if people were like mad that we're even like touching on this, I mean, like, there was world champion boxers on the undercard. It's a DAZN card. It's a Matchroom card. You know, it is what it is. It's boxing. Have at it.
It was a highly anticipated meeting of social media, KSI and Logan Paul, to appear and to squash the beef. You know, they had an amateur fight last year in...
I thought they were vegans.
In Manchester. Manchester, England. And then they decided to turn pro for this fight. So, I didn't really think much of the fight. You could see he was very amateurish. KSI went in there just kind of swinging bombs.
What did people expect? Did you really? I didn't expect them to come in there and, you know, have all this skill set and everything. What did people expect? I mean, obviously the hype because they're popular, but if you actually expected logically that they were going to come in there and be fighters like 30-0, they've been fighting for like 10 years. Come on.
No, I didn't honestly expect that, to be honest with you. And they were better than the first fight, you know, where it was literally just kind of both of them were just swinging. Yeah, so this time, you know, you could see Logan Paul kind of had a good jab, but at times looked like he was kind of too scared to throw it because he was obviously going to get something in return. KSI really just had a good engine on him and just decided just to go in there and just really empty the tank every round, just throwing as much as he could, you know, whether it, you know, hit them or not. And obviously, I think the biggest thing from the fight was the refereeing from Ray Corona, unfortunately.
Jack Reese.
Sorry, Ray Corona was the other one. Yeah, Jack Reese.
The two points,
which I know someone posted.
I honestly thought that was kind of, you know, that was kind of a little bit that he stretched it a little bit. Like,
I know someone posted on Twitter a screenshot of the rules, and that is in the rules.
No, yeah, I don't doubt that's not in the rules, but at the end of the day, it's essentially at the discretion of the official.
Well, Mike Tyson only got a point deducted when he bit Evander Holyfield the first time.
Yeah, I saw somebody reference that, and I understand that. But because I think they mentioned after that, like, you know, obviously you can see by the scorecards, if Paul wasn't taking away 2 points, he would have won that fight.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, that just gives him another reason to make the trilogy, which are, you know, and let's touch on, you know, and by the way, really quick, when Paul, during that knockdown, when he knocked down KSI and he got deducted 2 points, that first uppercut he got him with, that was actually a really nice shot.
Yeah, it was a nice shot.
But then he grabs him like with his left hand and he pushes his head down and he uppercuts him again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about that shot. Obviously, that was illegal. But that first shot, when he got him with the undercut, he goes right under his, I think, KSI's left arm and he uppercuts him. That was a nice shot. I was like, oh, wow, that was a beautiful shot. I give him credit for that.
It was funny because I think, was it Ryan Garcia on the commentary was calling for that shot? He kept telling him.
What did I tell you before that? We had this conversation right before we came on air. And I understand, you know, from a business perspective, he's a Golden Boy fighter, so they wanted to put him on that Canelo card, you know, to help buys and subscriptions and stuff. But I get it. You know, regardless, DAZN still has him on there. But I honestly think that Ryan Garcia, the Golden Boy matchup, should have made a deal to put Garcia on that card.
It would have made sense because of the social media following. Because
that's his audience. Yeah. That's his audience. And then obviously there would have been people, kids who were there and who are looking up this fight as a week's lead up to the fight, who would be aware of Ryan Garcia. And they'd be like, oh, who is this kid? And then they become fans. I think his stock would have went higher if he would have found on that card. But I get it. It wasn't a Golden Boy card per se. They did have Ronnie Rios on there, who's a friend of the show who actually got the W. So congratulations to Ronnie Rios, the pride of Santa Ana. We got to have him on. So Ronnie, if you're listening, you got to come on with your brother, Lex Luthor. But I think Ryan Garcia should have been on that card just because that was his audience. That's just my 2 cents.
No, I agree with you. I thought it was overall, honestly, one of the worst cards I've been to this year, to be honest, if I want me to be blatantly
honest.
Whoa.
It's a big statement, Mike.
I thought, you know, moving on to the next fight, because the KSI Logan Paul fight really was
Were you just frustrated? Okay, let's dive into your triggered opinion here. Were you just frustrated because obviously the fans who were in attendance, 12, 13,000, whatever they were, weren't boxing fans? They were fans of YouTubers and entertainment. Because you had mentioned that they weren't, a lot of the kids, a lot of the audience weren't watching the fights beforehand. They were watching who was coming in, I guess, celebrities, other YouTubers, Bieber and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is that affecting your opinion right here?
Not really. I went into it open-minded because, you know, apart from the so-called main event, the rest of them were names of note, you know, Devin Haney, Billy Joe Saunders, Ronnie Rios. So I was looking forward to seeing them fight. I thought Ronnie did well. You know, he got the W against an opponent. It was quite an interesting fight, you know, kind of back and forth. Ronnie was a little bit disappointed in his own performance because he was getting tagged a little bit too much. Billy Joe Saunders, obviously we all know what Billy Joe Saunders is about. It's about hitting them and not getting hit, kind of a very boring style. But
he did get the KO.
He got the KO, which was exciting. But, you know, the other 10 rounds, he was getting hit a lot, and you can see by his face.
What did people expect, though? That's how he fights.
But to be honest with you, I thought because this card is kind of like a throwaway card, it doesn't really mean much. I honestly expected Eddie Hearn to try to attract the younger fans that are going to be watching that just for the main event. You know, they may tune in for a few of the other fights. I thought he would have put Devin Haney in with somebody that Devin Haney could dominate and knock out. So people are like, hey, that guy's pretty good. Same thing for Billy Joe. I thought they were going to put him in with, you know, a come forward fighter that was just there that Billy Joe could kind of dance around, pepper shots, and get him out of there. Because those two fights were terrible. If I sat there as a boxing newbie and I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch this KSI Logan Paul fight because I know who they are. I don't know who the rest of the card is, but, you know, I'll have a watch. And you watched Billy Joe, I'd be like, oh my God, this is boring. Even I was bored and I went there to watch those fights. And I kept seeing myself like looking at my phone, kind of like looking at the listings to see who's up next. I was like, I was bored, and that's the fights I went to see. I didn't want to watch the main event.
Right, right. But and yeah, I understand that. I understand that. But I mean, they were the hope is that how DAZN and Eddie Hearn had said that the hope is they're able to retain some of this new audience who wants to be boxing fans, even if it's like 10-20%. Hey, that's progress. Because we all know, and then people are hating on it, and I get it, you know, it's a disrespect to the sport. People are saying this and that, but you got going from the business perspective, DAZN just entered the US market, what, less than 2 years ago?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, about 18 months or so.
Yeah, less than 2 years ago. So they're still a brand new service. You know, they're not a Netflix or something, you know, they're streaming service, which already gives them a leg up because it's a lot easier to obtain. But they're still trying to find their feet. And, I mean, Eddie Hearn has said in past interviews, he was just like, well, yeah. He's like, I work for DAZN. He's like, you know, they signed an agreement, a contract with me. I signed it with them and stuff like that, and I have to produce. And I understand that. And you don't. And Eddie Hearn has said when they were interviewing him, they were just like, hey, you know, you said in the past, like when we were interviewed, that this fight was a joke. The first one, it was a disrespect to the sport. And then he saw the numbers behind it, how much they did over a million pay-per-view buys. And yeah, like they sold them for like $25, something like that. But they still did over a million, and they sold out the O2, right, in London or England. And then Eddie Hearn even said that. He was like, yeah, once I saw the numbers that they put up, you know, I was like, holy crap, there's a market here. And yeah, and you don't think he went to DAZN. I guarantee you there was a conversation where Hearn goes, hey, you know, he talks to John Skipper, the head of DAZN, and tells him, hey, these guys, they move the needle. You know, like, even if we just get subscriptions for that month, that's a profit, or that's something, you know? And from a business perspective, you know, like, that's what it is with any type of service. The more subscribers you have, the more customers you have, obviously, the more money you can make, the more you can turn that around and invest or stay in the game. So from a money perspective and the hype train, especially because these guys, Logan Paul, KSI, have big audiences. You know, they have huge audiences. They are. They do. Them just promoting the fight on their DAZN tweets or Instagram tweets. From a business perspective, that was an excellent move, whether you agree with, you know, the fight or not. I mean, Eddie Hearn works for DAZN. He has to produce. It's the money. That's the bottom line at the end of the day.
We'll see more of them.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see more celebrity fights. Eddie Hearn already said in an interview, either before or after the fight, saying that he's had 5 or 6 like notable celebrities from music, from sports, from TV, right, from film, reach out to him and say, hey, I want to do something similar, or I want to fight the winner of tonight. He wouldn't name names because he obviously wants it kept hush-hush at the minute, but I guarantee you that we'll see more of these fights at the minute. It seems to be another... Oh, yeah. It's the flavor of the month. If they've got... like Tom Cruise coming in, how many millions of his fans are going to watch it to see what he's like? Or Mark Wahlberg, he used to box.
Right.
You know, him coming in, stuff like that. So
yeah, and we'll see it. And I know Jamel Herring obviously fought on Saturday against Lamont Roach, which is obviously a more tactical, you know, entertaining fight in terms of competitiveness as a world title fight. I understand that. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't watch that. But I think that the fact how professional fighters who are talking crap, talking smack about the fight on social media and stuff, saying it was disrespect to the sport and stuff like that, how they should look at it is say, like, man, these YouTubers who have never fought in their life, or a second time at least, are coming in from the outside in a main event on a boxing platform, you know, getting thousands and thousands of fans at the Staples Center and generating all this hype. They have Justin Bieber there. They have all these celebrities, Rick Ross, all these guys. And it's their pro debut, essentially. It is a pro debut. And 0-0 fight records. And they're coming in and they're drawing all this attention, you know, and getting paid. You know, I think their guarantee was like 900,000 or a million. And, you know, they'll probably get something on the back end as well. You know, so to the fighters, especially, who are hating on it. And I understand the opinions behind that, but you got to look at it from a business perspective. These guys have personalities. That's what sold this fight. That's what generated this hype. That's what got that attention. You know, take some note, even if you're just like, oh, I'm not about that. Like, I just want my talent to showcase. And, you know, I get that, but there's not that, you know, you have to have like the full package with that. Like Canelo doesn't really have the personality. He's a very soft-spoken guy. I mean, now he's been in back and forth with people and stuff. But Canelo, because it worked out for him, because he's Mexican-American, so he has that fan base. He's obviously an excellent boxer. He's a good-looking guy, and he showed that he's willing to fight the best guys in the world. You know, and so in terms, they just worked out for him, you know. But there's other fighters that they don't have those opportunities like that. It just doesn't work out for them. So you kind of have to, like, we had Blair Cobbs on last week. He tries to push the personality, and that's where it's at, is a personality. And then you have to be able to back it up in the ring. So the fact that these two YouTube kids, you know, 20 something years old, come in and, you know, headline the Staples Center and stuff like that, and everybody else is mad at them, like, well, take a page out of their book, use the personality. You know, if you know you have the talent, use the personality, and you'll make that money, you'll generate that hype, and then your career is just going to go up. You know, I'm not saying that this should happen again, read their trilogy or not.
It will.
It probably will. But, you know, you got to look at the silver lining here, you know. And then in terms of looking at it from a DAZN perspective, people are saying DAZN shouldn't have put this on. Well, you know, they're trying to make money. They're still focused on boxing. They signed some of the biggest stars in boxing after HBO folded, you know. And them making money and all this business perspective and all that stuff just enhances their position in the sport to stay longer. I mean, anybody who wants to really see like Fox or Showtime or all these guys, DAZN, really fold, like saying like, oh yeah, they should go away. You're not a fan. Why would you want to see boxing content and all these other fighters, like, you know, lose their platforms and stuff? Like, no, we want them to succeed. We want them all to succeed, you know, regardless. And if that's what they have to do to kind of stay afloat or do whatever they have to do, then, you know, it is what it is.
Exactly. I think you should really just take the fight for what it is. You know, people are getting too blown up about it. And I think, 90% of the boxers we've spoken to and asked the question on here, what they thought of the fight, they understood it.
They get it.
Yeah, they get it. They understand it's a business. It's sports entertainment. You know, like you touched on, is you may have all the skills in the world, but if no one wants to watch you because you're a boring fighter that keeps going 12 rounds, like Bivol or Andrade, you know, you need to have a persona like Tyson Fury did. He's not the most exciting fighter in the ring, but outside of the ring, he's crazy. You know,
he knows that. I think he knows that.
Yeah, exactly. Same as like Dave Allen, the heavyweight from England. Huge social media following. That's the only reason Eddie Hearn really uses him. You know, he headlined an event against David Price, and the guy's talent is pretty low. So,
oh, yeah.
Goes to show.
So, just the 2 cents from the last round, team. And then, you know, touching on, diving into it, Jamel Herring gets the unanimous decision win to retain his WBO super featherweight title against Lamont Roach in Fresno, California at the Chuck Hansi Park. This was on ESPN Plus, and Jamel Herring is a friend of the show. He's been on. We interviewed him at the Bank of California Stadium at the Top Rank on ESPN card a couple months back. And he's also, like I mentioned, he's a veteran. So this was like he came in a Hummer. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of cool. And then we asked, obviously, Cancio about it because they're both world champions at that weight. And then Cancio even mentioned Lamont Roach. There was a moment where Lamont Roach caught him, I think, with like a sweeping left hook or right hook or something like that. And Herring's legs kind of were wobbled, and then, you know, he tried to attack him and stuff. I thought it was an entertaining fight. You know, I thought there was good moments throughout the fight. What'd you think?
I thought it was a good fight. Definitely, you know, a boxer against a counter-puncher with Jamal Herring being the taller, longer man. He sort of kept Roach, like, at bay, you know, and tried to make Roach fight a fight that he wasn't too comfortable with. Down the stretch, like you say, he caught him with a nice left hook in the 11th, which kind of, you know, made Herring kind of stumble a little bit, but Roach really couldn't finish it off. Definitely a close fight. You know, I think Herring, once the opponents get bigger, he kind of like ups his performance. So it'd be nice to see where he goes from here. Definitely the Cancio fight would be interesting. Jojo Diaz, Tevin Farmer, all those guys, a little round robin of all those fighting each other would be great. So good performance. And, you know, especially on a weekend where he needed it with all the fans being there for him.
Right.
Big Marine support.
I think it was a great fight. And I think Lamont Roach, I still think that he could have another opportunity to be in a world title fight in the future. I think he had a solid performance, even though he lost.
I thought it was a solid performance, but I don't think he's world level.
You don't think so?
No.
So you don't think he can get to that world title?
No, personally, no.
Really?
I just saw him in some of the fights at Golden Boy at Fantasy Springs, and I think I saw him in Vegas on an undercard one time of Rosado and somebody that we were talking about recently that I couldn't remember his name that day either. Glenn Tapia. I think he was on the undercard on the undercard of that against kind of like a journeyman sort of type person that he should have really been putting away. Unless he goes away, changes trainer, improves, in my opinion, a lot.
Right.
I don't see him becoming a world champion unless he gets a gimme.
I think he has a lot of potential though. I mean, and I say potential in the terms of like, he's obviously just had a world title fight, so obviously he made it up to that level, but he still has the potential to make it to a world title eventually. I still think it's there. Even if it's like a 10% potential or 90%, I'm just saying it's there.
And I'm talking about one of the four.
I hope you're wrong again. I hope you're wrong again like you were wrong. Like I told Cancio how you threw him under the bus, so now he doesn't like you. So now if he doesn't come on again in the future, it's because of you.
I'm talking about one of the four recognized world titles, not a WBA gold and silver.
I'm an IBO fan, sorry.
You know, one of the other great pullers in the world.
I'm a Chris Eubank Jr. fan. I'm an IBO championship fighter.
I might take an IBO belt to work one day.
You better not.
Just stroll in to get changed.
You better not. Also on that card, Kubrat Pulev. I guess he's back from his kissing hiatus. I guess a unanimous decision win over Rydell Booker by scores of 98-92, twice 99-91. Obviously, you know, Top Rank signed him to have an opponent there in the heavyweight division for Tyson Fury and all that stuff. So, you know, now they put him back out there. So, you know, it is what it is. That was a fight he was obviously expected to win. So it is what it is. And, you know, he's just there as a plan B for like a Fury and
he looked terrible.
Well, yeah. But I mean, when Top Rank signed him, everybody knew why. It is what it is.
It was like he was playing the PlayStation and you had like the headshot button.
What?
The headshot button worked, but the body shot button didn't. And he was just going headshot, 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 headshot. I was like, is there really going to be any body work tonight?
I guess not. I guess not. Bring back Fight Night. All my video game fanatics out there, Fight Night round. Is it 5? Would that be the next one? I don't know. Bring back a boxing video game. We need to see it. We need to see it. Also on that card, Amir Imam gets the 4th round KO over Marcos Mojica. Imam's challenge for the world title before. And this was a return from a nearly 2-year layoff, which is crazy. 2 years? That's a long time.
Hasn't fought since he challenged Jose Ramirez for the vacant WBC super lightweight world title in March 2018.
That's wild.
He looked good, though. Looked like he had a little bit left in the tank, even though he had such a long layoff.
Crazy. And then moving on to this Friday the 15th, from the Margaret Court Arena in Melbourne, Australia, down under on ESPN Plus, Andrew Maloney, 20-0. It was a recent signee for Top Rank. Signed earlier this year. Goes up against Elton Dairy. Or is it Dairy? How do you say that, Mike?
I would go Dairy.
Dairy. Elton Dairy. 24-5-1 for the interim WBA super flyweight title. Maloney won a WBA world title eliminator in March when he traveled to Chile and knocked out hometown hero Miguel Angel Gonzalez in the 8th round. He last fought on June 15th. In Tweed Heads, Australia? What the hell kind of name is that? Tweed Heads? I almost said weed head because I saw the W-E-E-D, and I don't know why I ignored the T. He's the twin, right? Aren't they twins?
Yeah, Jason Maloney's on the same card as well. He's fighting Dixon Flores for the WBA, Oceania, Bantamweight title. Both signed with Top Rank earlier this year, so we should see them over on these shores sometime soon. Hearing good things about them, so definitely ones to watch.
So, yeah, that should be a solid card on ESPN Plus. So if you have the Plus, you can watch it on there. ESPN Plus fan fights are also on demand after, right?
Yeah, they're also on demand. You know, they have a lot of, obviously, the Top Rank, and they also get the Frank Warren shows.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of boxing on there.
That's pretty cool. And then news and notes. News and notes of the show. The Tony Harrison, Jermell Charlo rematch is official for December 21st in Ontario, California. Not Canada. Ontario, California. There's an arena out here that holds maybe, about 12,000? The Toyota Arena, the formerly Citizens Bank Arena. It's now the Toyota Arena, right here in Southern California. Ontario, California is probably about 40 miles just outside of LA, give or take, just outside of downtown LA. So this fight was supposed to happen, 2-3 months ago? And then Harrison got hurt in training or something, so they postponed it.
Then Charlo had the sticky fight because he fought anyway, right?
I think so, yeah. I think so. So, I'm looking forward to this fight. Obviously, the first one, Harrison got the upset. It was a competitive fight. Some people say, no, Charlo should have got it. But Harrison, I think, obviously did enough to win. Harrison might be on that high. I think he is, but he might be on that high just as Cancio is. He's just confident. He's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna do it again. You know, that wasn't a fluke.
I can see it not being a fluke. I think Charlo is okay when he's applying the pressure. I think if you turn it around and put it on him, I think he kind of struggles a little bit. He's not really got that much of a back foot game. So it'd be an interesting fight. It's on our doorstep, so you know we're obviously intrigued with it.
Yeah, Southern California. I'm telling you, Southern California. I know they say Madison Square Garden, all that stuff, is like the mecca of boxing. You know, I'm not gonna lie. There's good boxing there. They have big fights. You know, New York is obviously New York and LA, probably arguably the biggest cities in the United States. But can't go wrong with Southern California. You really can't. We're the hotbed. What do you think, Mike? It's not England, too, so you can't say anything. You've lived here long enough to not say that.
Well, I'm biased, you know, so I mean, obviously, I want Southern California to be the hotbed because I live here, so.
Well, yeah.
As many as you can in Vegas.
Well, yeah. That's the only reason you moved out here.
Any excuse to go to Vegas.
It's just acknowledge the elephant in the room. That's why Mike moved from England, from over there, the UK, to the United States because of boxing. That's the only reason. You know, everybody says all opportunities. No, he's like, nope. Boxing it is. He's like, I'm a fan. I'm that hardcore of a fan. I'm coming to California, right?
That's it. Just turned up.
I think you posted this on Twitter within the last couple of weeks. The Pride of Providence, right? You want to go into that?
The Pride of Providence returns to the ring Saturday, November 23rd. Pito Manfredo Jr. to headline the second event of CES Boxing UFC Fight Pass. He's fighting the romantic redneck, Melvin Russell.
Melvin Russell.
Everyone probably knows Pito Manfredo Jr. from, obviously, the Contender Series.
Right.
The same one that had Sergio Mora. So, you know, he kind of openly admitted he's back because he needs the money.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happens. You know, I mean, like, can you really fault the guy for that? I mean, that he's not the first or the last person to do that. I mean, do you think Cancio did that? He mentioned, I mean, we had talked about it before, that he got beat by, I think, Diaz. And I think after that, he kind of retired for a little bit. He just, his heart wasn't in it. And I think he's mentioned his past interviews that his kids told him to go back. And, you know, and I understand that. But, you know, there's also money in boxing and stuff. You know, and now he's likely making more money than he is during the year at his job. So it works out. And then, I mean, can you really blame the guy? I mean, I don't know.
As long as he doesn't obviously get hurt, he hasn't fought since 2016, so that's a 3-year layoff. So it's a long time. So good luck to him. And obviously, he was one of the favorites from the contender. So,
but Bernard Hopkins fought until he was 50.
George Foreman.
So it happens.
Vander Holyfield.
But you know, once again, guys, we appreciate. Oh, we should touch on that. That's right. Really quickly, Danny Roman was elevated by the WBA to super champion. super regular, all this stuff. It's ridiculous. Roman is also was already a unified champion. He also holds the IBF crown, and he's currently back in the gym training for his mandatory challenger. All right, I'm not saying this name. You're saying it.
Murov Akhmadeliev.
You're welcome. You're welcome, because I'm not going to pronounce that. So the super champion, regular champion, all that stuff, whatever. It is what it is. But I like Danny Roman is a great fighter, though. He's exciting to see. I like watching him fight.
Yeah, he had one of the fights of the year earlier this year against, who was it, the Irish guy?
I forgot. Chicago, I think, right?
When he fought, was it the Forum?
Was it? Oh, yeah, the Matchroom card.
Doheny, when he fought Doheny, yeah. TJ Doheny.
That's right. That was a good fight. But once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to episode, what is it, 56, Mike?
56.
Episode 56 of The Last Round. Once again, we want to give our thanks to Andrew Cancio, the 130-pound WBA World Super Featherweight Champion, who fights November 23rd at the Fantasy Springs Casino on DAZN against Rene Alvarado in the third defense of his world title. So we thank, big thanks to Andrew Cancio for coming on this week as our guest. And Mike, tell everybody where they can follow us.
You can catch us at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter, and be sure to tune in next week as we preview Wilder Ortiz and then Cancio Alvarado.
You got it. So for once again, I'm Danny Z. For my co-host, Michael Shepard, this is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round.